We are recording.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Welcome to our study of the sealed book. And we're in the sealed book of Moses. Today is the 18th day of April, 2021. And we are in chapter 15. We have read already the first six verses. And it's talking about, so we're on page 117 if you have a hard copy. And it's talking about, it's going to be talking about the plagues in Egypt and the Exodus. And in verse 6, it talked about the throwing the staff on the ground and the two great snakes. So we're just about to start the plagues. So if is there any comment before we start, that if there's any comment, speak up, and otherwise let's maybe read both. Who would read both verses 7 and 8 for us? Steve?
Yes. Verse 7. Then the Lord spoke to me again and said, Pharaoh's heart is insensible to the facts, for how much he keeps an air of superiority to me, the Lord. Behold, therefore, I, the Lord, will overthrow all his arrogance and will not destroy him until he knows that there is no God but me, and that no one can equal me in all the earth. And for this reason, I will leave Pharaoh to exist, to show him my power, and that my name, Jehovah, may be known in all the nations that are under the sun because of Egypt. Therefore, Pharaoh will still refuse to let my people go.
Okay. Comments.
Well, the Lord knew even at the end, even after doing all of this, that Pharaoh was still not going to let his people go. But his reasoning had a purpose. His reasoning for doing all of this and showing Pharaoh was that he was showing the rest of the world, because Moses' story has been told forever in movies and books and everywhere. Right.
And I'll just add to that, not only did he know, by the way, there's two long dashes in each of those verses, and those long dashes are secret signs that I later found out mean something there has been left out. It doesn't mean that, I mean, there's no reason for a dash there otherwise, right? I mean, there's nothing, nobody's stopping to think about what they're going to say next. So there's parts there that we have not been given for whatever reason. Maybe that'll come later. I don't know. I just found out what the dashes meant at one time. But in addition to what you just said, that he wants the story told, I read the whole thing again this morning in the Bible, preparing for the class. Nowhere in the Bible does it say that the Lord knows he's going, that the Lord is purposely keeping Pharaoh alive until the Pharaoh actually knows for himself for sure. But it says that here, I will not, but it shows that the Lord says he's going to destroy him. He said, I will not destroy him until he knows there is no God but me. So we go through all 10 of these plagues, and then what happens to Pharaoh? He's buried, he dies in the Red Sea. There are other accounts from other places that say he survived. Even the one account that's been survived in Egypt of this says that, but there's facts the other way. So even the Pharaoh is like in the Ten Commandments in the movie, he's not right. He's sitting up in his chariot and he watches everybody else go down and he goes back. The movies aren't always exactly right, okay. So there's a comment for me. Any other comments?
May I comment?
Yes, Harm.
We had an interesting discussion this week in the Netherlands about the rubbing of art of Egypt, and that they should take it back. But it's funny now, with this knowledge of the sealed book, we can see how the Lord works through the visual stuff before the truth, so that we are prepared to look through the gold. I was thinking about that, to show in my power that my name may be known in all nations under the sun because of Egypt. And I think it's interesting. I remember when they started with the Discovery Channel, I loved it when they did all the programs about the temples all over the world, that they would connect with the stars, you know?
Yes.
But it's all preparation for this new knowledge, that and that he will show him his might to the nations, because that's what people understand, the big things. And first you have the big things, the big miracles with and when they come to the mount with all the fire and smoke, and it's interesting that it's so, for this reason I will leave Pharaoh to exist. And it's interesting, I think, with the whole discussion of heritage all over the world.
Good point. Think how different it would have been if the Lord had said, oh, he won't let you go? Fine, I'll kill him now, and we'll put in somebody that'll let you go. Go fix that. Oh, it would have ruined.
Yeah.
Cecil B. DeMille would not have had a movie called The Ten Commandments,
We have to visualize.
You have to see it, and especially people have been progressing throughout the history, and more in the past, they needed to see. We talked about this, how they needed to see that the Jehovah is the most powerful God. Now, we talked about how in the Antichrist coming, it's not a question of who's more powerful anymore. It's if you want to worship one who is evil or one who is good. Because a lot of these people on the old gods, they knew they were evil gods. They called them evil. They didn't always worship, these righteous idols were very often evil. And they knew it. So anyway, people need this. Another thing is, he said, because of Egypt, all people will know it. Well, Egypt did not. It's not because of what the Egyptians wrote in their papyri. For many years, nothing was found in Egyptian writings, papyri, that talked about any of these things. And so scholars said, aha, the Bible is just a myth, because if anything like that happened in Egypt, they would have written it down and we would know. Well, it turns out, and I think it might say it in this book, but it turns out that what they do in the old world, and they still do, when they write, history is written by the conquerors, by the victors, and they get to see their side of it. And after Moses, they took out all references to Moses. All references to Joseph, I think, were taken out. And everything about the disasters of the were taken out. There was one papyrus found, the IPOTWER papyrus, something close to that, which was found, and it does describe all of the plagues. And it describes exactly what happens and how the Amalekites came in afterwards and just decimated Egypt after the plagues, because most of their army had been killed in the chariots in the Red Sea. So Egypt was open. Anyway, things have been found since to verify it. But the reason it's known in all the world is not because of Egyptian history. It's known because of the Bible and Moses having written it all through the world. Okay. Tori, can you read, are you there where you can read verses 9 and 10?
9 and 10?
Yes, please.
In turn, for how much the magician priests continue to deceive their hearts with priestly deeds of the Mahan order, I, the Lord, will multiply my signs in the land of Egypt. So go again in the presence of Pharaoh. In the presence of Pharaoh in the morning, when he is going forth to go to the Nile, and you should touch the waters of the river with your rod, that it may become blood before the sight of Pharaoh. And though their wizards do the same, they will soon see the power that the power of the God of the Hebrews is overwhelmingly superior. For I am hurting not only the waters of Pharaoh's bath, but the wealth of Egypt, which depends exclusively on the Nile.
Okay, comments, please. This is the first plague, the plague of everything turning to blood. And in the Bible, it says that in all the cisterns, in all the water storages, in all the ponds and lakes and everywhere, all the water turned to blood. The only way they could get fresh water was to dig down in the sand and then filter it out, and then they could get some fresh water, it says. So this is the first plague of the blood.
So it wasn't just we turned it to blood and then it went back to good water.
Right, it stayed for quite a while. Yeah, it stayed. I think it's at least a week. I don't think the Bible says how long, but it just says they were out digging for water. So again, see, like Harm said, You don't just do the trick in 5 minutes and say, okay, we're all done. It's got to impress them with thirst. And the strange thing to me here is the priests do the same thing. If the priest said, aha, we will touch it and turn it back to water, now we'd be impressed. But they say, oh no, we can also turn water to blood. And if I were the Pharaoh, I'd say, what are you thinking? Don't do that. You're now, on my side.
it's funny also with the bath. It's like what you said. It doesn't name all the different stages, what the consequences were, but it's just the smallest and the biggest, you know? Like the bath, that's pretty personal, you know, but also the wealth exclusively depends on the Nile, and that was also broken down, you know? But it's funny that it's almost like personal from the Lord to Pharaoh just to, you know, just to make him prepare for the bigger sorrow, you know?
Right, for everything. Actually, let me comment on the bath, because I'm glad I read it in the Bible today too, because most of the Egyptians bathed twice a day. It was just the standard. And you go out in the morning to the Nile River to bathe. And to in the evening, so twice, so you know, twice a day bathing, and so I think it's in the Bible where, because I just read it now, where it says that when the Pharaoh goes out to the river to bathe, that's when they would go out and touch the water. So it wasn't like a private bathtub in his palace. It was, and remember that when Moses was found, that his daughter was going out for her morning bath, and she sees this basket floating with a baby. And so anyway, that apparently was the tradition at that time. And that way, because you see the power of that, they're all out there bathing, and all of a sudden the water's all turned to blood. That would be impressive. Yes, indeed. Okay, other comments. This is the first plague. All right, let's move on. Harm, could you read maybe 11 and 12 for us?
Then the Egyptians will ask Pharaoh, where is Hapi, the god of the waters of the Nile? He fled before Jehovah, or did he never exist, as Moses had taught among the Egyptians? Later, when the third plague occurred, even the magician priests were obliged to admit that the finger of the Hebrew God was afflicting Egypt, and were so severely afflicted by the plague of boils that they could not appear before Pharaoh to oppose Moses during this plague.
Okay. So now I actually tried to memorize all the 10 plagues this morning so I could keep them straight. And let me ask for your comments first. Comments from you, what do you think?
Go ahead.
The boils, I thought that's also personal, but then it's on the body, you know? The water is the next stage, the filthy water you want to bathe, but the boils, maybe they even could get some pestilence or some disease spread, but they could not appear, you know? So there were, that's, I think it's interesting with the magician priests.
Yes.
That they were themselves,
Hurt.
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry.
Well, my comment was that it's like the Egyptians, they're asking where is Happy, their god. They figured it out kind of quickly. Pharaoh was the stubborn one. He just kind of refused to even look at all of this. So now we're starting to get people asking questions, which I'm sure made Pharaoh mad. And then in 12, where the magician priests, they almost like gave up. They sort of figured it out. And then they had the boils and they couldn't go against Pharaoh. Again, Pharaoh is starting to stand by himself. Even his little minions are questioning him. And this is probably a good point of knowing that we don't have to, that we can ask questions and that we can stand up for ourselves, and that just because the guy in charge is saying this is what we're doing, we don't have to. We can go to our own understanding and relationship with Heavenly Father.
Good point. Now that you mention it, in verse 11, it's an amazing point where it says, I can see them saying, this is not amazing that they say, where is Hopi, the god of the waters of the Nile? That I can understand. But the next one, or did he never exist? Wow, that's a huge step to actually realize, did he never exist? They've been, just think of how people are conditioned to believe in the gods that they believe.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be like a Mormon who really, you know, somebody who really believed in God and suddenly say, oh, wait a minute, or God, does God not exist? Usually the people that say that didn't have really much knowledge of it. And that's what it sounds like that they are.
Well, we have that now, right? Because my friend is also, that I texted, like, yeah, there's only one prophet. And that's President Nelson.
Right.
So now I'm here with, well,
there's only one prophet. Mauricio,
no,
man.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It's a huge thing for your friend to say, oh, I've been worshiping the wrong prophet all this time. Okay.
Yeah, that's no. And certainly she's not going to do that because she's very stuck in the traditions and, you know, the temples and the connections she has in the temple. They're all, you know,
stuck is the perfect word. You speak so well, both of you speak English so well, but stuck is the word where they can't move, they cannot change. So that's actually pretty amazing. And yes, this is where the priests, and it's on the third, they don't mention all the plagues here, but on the third plague, on the second plague, the magicians did it too, the same one. And again, if I were Pharaoh, I'd say, don't keep making it worse. You know, don't make it worse. Get rid of the plague. But on the third one, they get the boils. They can't even stand up to, they can't even do anything. And in the Genesis, it says, they go to him and say, hey, Jehovah is the real God. Ours are magician tricks. We know we're magicians. We know no God is doing it. And his is a real God. His God is God. That's the line from the Ten Commandments show, which finally the Pharaoh says, his God is God. The magician said that on the third plate. And they said, please let him go. And he says, no, he wouldn't. So yes. Any other comments?
It's exactly the same as in with Daniel, with the three kings. But there are stages that they finally chorus. He has to let them go, you know, because he has all the signs. And the first one, also Nebuchadnezzar, that he has to eat grass and everything, and then acknowledge. I am now first time I recognize it's the same thing.
Very good. See, he could have, when Nebuchadnezzar was going to throw the three into the fire, the Lord could have said, oh no, I won't let you hurt my servants, and he could have killed Nebuchadnezzar. But no, yeah. It's the same. See, these are patterns. He wants Nebuchadnezzar to be converted, actually, and
for a future purpose.
For future purpose. And if you read chapter 4 of Daniel, it is not written by Daniel. Chapter 4 is written by Nebuchadnezzar. After he's gone out and eaten grass, he comes back, and it's his testimony. And he says, now I know that the Hebrew God is the true God. So God loves Nebuchadnezzar too. He doesn't just love the good guys. We're all sinners. He's trying to convert Pharaoh. He's trying to convert Nebuchadnezzar. He gives everybody so many chances to repent and to come to him. And Nebuchadnezzar did. And we learn from the sealed book that we're going to learn up in the three Nephites part that in the parable of Zenos in Jacob chapter 5, when at the very first, the Lord says, and the Lord of the vineyard said to his servant, we're going to go and plant these branches in different places. That servant is Nebuchadnezzar. Who would have thought that? It's Nebuchadnezzar that planted the colonies in Greece and in Spain and in Italy and all around the Mediterranean. He's the one that planted the branches. Huh. And
the golden hat.
Yeah, I mean, so he was a servant of God. And remember, when Israel was sinning, the Jeremiah tells Israel that Nebuchadnezzar is going to be God's servant, and he's going to come down and punish you because you keep killing the prophets. There was a prophet named Urijah, U-R-I-J-A-H, Urijah. Wow. And he prophesied, and he gets killed immediately. And that's why you never hear of him, never gets to write a book, as far as I know. And so right in the Bible, it says that the Lord is using Nebuchadnezzar to come down and punish them and take them into captivity. Anyway, a lot of words there. Let's see this. We're going to be able to finish easy today, but we had a lot of other stuff, so we're still taking up the time. Should we go on? Any other comments? Okay, so let's see. So Balkia, you wanted to read just verse 13 for us?
Yeah. Then came the frogs to ruin them, the locusts that devoured their crops, the hail and rain of stone and lightning that devastated their flocks, and the armies of angels to bring calamity, slaying all the firstborn of Egypt, including the son of Pharaoh. From the fourth blow upon Egypt, Jehovah specifically separated Goshen to remain unscathed.
Unscathed.
Okay. Setting aside the land where his people lived.
Thank you.
Unscathed is that it's not
hurt. It means unhurt, not bothered, no trouble.
Yeah.
Not unaffected.
Yeah. So Goshen was a bit like Zion, or the city of Enoch, maybe a little.
Yes.
In the beginning.
Well, not well, that they God's... were righteous, that they but they were protected. In the they were yeah. like in the sense that Zion will be protected from
yeah.
a lot of the plagues. Hopefully. Now this well, part, there's a lot of new things. Let's discuss this more. There's quite a bit important here.
So the Lord decided Goshen was going to be a protected area, but he allowed the first part of the plagues to affect everybody.
Right, the first three.
Okay.
The first three, the boils, the first yeah, three
from the
were, four, yeah. for everybody on. The fourth one was flies. Okay. And from the flies on, nothing happened in Goshen. So the cattle are going to die. There's going to be these hailstones from heaven. And I remember the hail is before the locusts, because in the Bible it says the hail killed all of the crops that were fairly well grown. I mean, and this is not regular hail. This is fire, a rain of fire. It's and brimstone, sulfur. It's like Sodom and Gomorrah. Fiery hail comes down and killed all the big plants. And then it said after that, then the wheat started to sprout more, and the barley and the wheat come later. And then it said that the locusts come and destroyed everything that had not been destroyed by the fire. And then there was darkness. The point of this is not to list all the plagues, because he knows that we have that in Genesis.
Yeah.
But to say that all these things are happening. But go ahead. I'm not saying too much. What do you see anything new here that you don't remember, or
well, I said this a little bit last week, and just want to kind of re-say every time I read the next chapter, it just makes me feel more and more about how important the Old Testament is. I have never spent any amount of time really in the Old Testament. But again, here's a symbolic discussion on everybody went through the first part of the plague. And then the Lord, well, he didn't really actually go separate, because Goshen was a land all of its own, but he identified Goshen as being a more protected area. And if that's the way the end times is going to come, if we learn this in the Old Testament, how the Lord handles, he puts out these plagues, and then he's going to protect his descendants,
his covenant people.
And that's teaching us again how to be prepared for the future. And I see this in the Old Testament all the time. Maybe when people are reading this, they think, oh, this is just reiterating old stuff. The old
stuff. Yeah, been there, done that.
Never realizing what the Old Testament is supposed to be teaching us.
And especially us now, because Mauricio really is like Moses in doing the same things. We've had Joni, the two that we were just announced, that was the part when I was talking about a golden calf. That was the problem when Mauricio was gone. That was sort of like a golden calf, where people stopped doing things and going back to the old ways and doing different things. So Mauricio is going to the desert. We have had our golden calf now. I'm just saying it. And the Old Testament is given to us for a pattern. Absolutely.
Yeah. So what's next? Do you remember what's next? What comes after the calf?
Well, the law. That then comes the laws of God comes next. That's where Moses was. He was getting laws. And see, what did I just announce today? The first official announcement of the first presidency is something we have not understood about who should be baptized, who should take the sacrament. It's sort of a beginning of understanding the laws better. And there's going to be more of this to come. And another thing that has been said that I feel to share now is from this, I've got the tears and everything, and I, you know, I don't need to do that. From this point on, this church will start to grow. This has been the beginning of the growing pains. There's still going to be slander and libel and attacks on the church, just like when Joseph Smith's day, when it started to grow, that the opposition will not stop. But the church will now start to grow. And I've been wondering why it hasn't more, but there's a time, there's a pattern for everything. The new thing in here I wanted to mention, the armies of angels. What it says in the Bible is, it says, first of all, we're all sort of taught that like something really bad comes through Egypt on the killing of the firstborn. And the Lord says, when in one place it says, the destroyer came and destroyed them. And we think of the destroyer as the bad guy. Ooh, this must have been Satan. Satan's not going to be out there helping God do his work. The earlier part in Genesis says, I, the Lord, will pass over and go through Egypt, and I will slay all of the firstborn. And I want to say something about the firstborn of the cattle. When it talks about killing the firstborn, it says all of the cattle. But earlier, there's a plague on the cattle, and then it explains what the word cattle means. And it's more like the word flock, the flocks, because it says on all the cattle. And then it says in particular on all of the horses, all of the donkeys, all of the sheep. So when there were plagues earlier on all of the, we always hear all of the cattle, that's just the translation into English. It's more like flocks of herding animals. All had horrible plagues and killing them. And so then he just summarizes that in one word as cattle, but you're supposed to know, see, this is a translation problem. It is the word in English, but now today it means cows. But in the days of King James, apparently it meant more like herds or flocks. I said that. Okay, with that in mind, after this, then come the army of angels to bring calamity, slaying all the firstborn. So when the Lord said, I, the Lord, will pass through Egypt and kill all the firstborn, now we're seeing how that was done. Armies of angels came and slayed all the firstborn. So it was not a mysterious gas like we all saw in the Ten Commandments, the green gas that came through. It wasn't poisonous gas. They made a great movie. That was an amazing movie. But anyway, that's not in the Bible. Armies of angels. Oh, he's got a footnote there. What does the footnote say?
Psalm
70. I have never looked at the footnote. Psalm 78:49 talks maybe something about that. Okay. Hail, lightning came down. Rain of stone and stone and lightning, but it's
brimstone.
Well, maybe when the Bible, this is more correct than what I understood from the Bible. It talks about a rain of fire, and I'm thinking like brimstone burning things. But here it says of hail and rain of stone and lightning. See, lightning's like fire. Something started a lot of fires, and there might have been a lot of lightning that started fires. I just realized that this might be more clear than the Bible, but something, crops were destroyed, fires were started, and Egypt was burned and destroyed. So that's a little different wording.
You know, the part there where it says, including the son of Pharaoh, if I had been Pharaoh and my son was killed, I had to start thinking.
That's exactly what turned the tide. It was that night, the night his son was killed, that very night, he calls Moses and says, you win.
But he still chased them to the...
Well, that was 3 days later. 3 days later, on Easter Sunday, on Thursday, he says, get out of here and take stuff. Take the spoils of Egypt and just get out. And the people had been begging him to let him go way back since the third or fourth plague. So that's when they leave and they take the diamonds. That's where they get the gold for the golden calf. Slaves don't have gold. So they took all the gold earrings and gold jewelry and whatever. And they took all this and went out into the desert. And 3 days later, which is on Easter Sunday, the Pharaoh wakes up, which is what you do on Easter, the resurrection. He awakens and thinks, I let all the slaves go. What was I thinking? That's crazy. And that's when he started chasing them.
Okay.
And he got out there in 3 days and they went, kept going for three more days. So at the end of 6 days is the last day of Passover. And the crossing of the Red Sea is on the separate holy day called the last day of Passover. So and Passover, it doesn't say it here, but it starts with a meal on the Passover, and then there's a week called the Feast of Unleavened Bread, where they cannot eat leaven in their bread. And they do that for a week, and then the last day of Passover is also a holy day, and that's the day of crossing the Red Sea. And the crossing the Red Sea is like birth. Egypt was like the womb where Israel was in the gestation, and the baby was getting ready to be born. Crossing the waters is like the breaking of the waters for the woman in birth. And then they go into the wilderness, which is like leaving the womb and going into life. So it's all symbolic. They're 40 days. Well, anyway, it goes on and on. That's it's getting time, and look, we're gonna just finish. So we're just right on time. But Goshen, wait a minute, this is very important. People can see, they don't have to study statistics for the people to figure out, wait a minute, none of these last plagues happened in Goshen. None of the cattle, none of the flies, none of the locusts. It didn't even have, they haven't have hailstones, and nobody died there, and their cattle. When the firstborn died, it was the firstborn of all the cattle. That's what I meant to say here. See, the firstborn, does it say cattle here?
No.
Saying the firstborn of Egypt. In the Bible, it says, and of all the cattle. And I'm saying, and cattle means horses and sheep. See, the firstborn of the sheep. But none of them died in Goshen, and no flies and no hailstone. It doesn't take a genius to figure out, wait a minute, this really is not, it's not just a general bad weather climate change thing. This really is the God of the Hebrews, and they are protected. So that's really a huge thing. And I say that because I deal a lot with statistics and trying to prove that after a certain point, like when they go out in the desert, the Lord's going to want to teach them about the Sabbath day, and they're going to collect manna for 6 days. And on every seventh day, there's no manna. And if they collected it on the sixth day, it goes bad. Doesn't take a genius to figure out, wait a minute, this is not like, see, Velikovsky wrote a book and said, oh, this is a comet came by and hydrocarbons were in the air and they're distilling it out and it falls down. Yeah, that explains a lot, except why did it never fall on the Sabbath day? And why did twice as much fall before? See, so when the Lord does a miracle, he leaves his signature in it. And this, okay, moving on. See, we've got through you two. So let's go over to Lisa. Would you read verse 14 for us?
Yes, after the time of the plagues and the deliverance of the people of Israel by mighty hand, as recorded in the annals I wrote, the time has come when the Lord requires me, Moses, to structure his church so that the Lord would have a people with his name by which he might call his special property among the children of men.
Okay, so comments.
I love the term, the special property.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, well, if the Lord is this powerful and he's picked out these special people, then I want to be part of that too. What do I do? How do I get there? You know?
Ed is joining us here.
Hey, Ed.
Hi, Ed.
Somebody didn't wake me up.
He thought we would wake him up, and we did not. I'm so, I apologize. I should have come and shaken him.
Special property.
Right, right. We're just reading how he, yes, right. I apologize.
We're dead. So it's mad.
Oh, we can.
Oh, no. My fault.
Again, it comes back to even in the Old Testament that it's his people, his church, his, not anybody else.
Right, right. And he uses words like property. I don't remember that exact word, but these are my people.
And he bought them.
Yeah, he bought them. Exactly. Very good. Very good. He bought them. Yeah. He paid a price, and okay, I'll tell you very quickly something I learned in Brazil on my mission. I won't tell you that it was actually 55 years ago. And that is, we had a lady who had dealt with evil forces and sold her soul, signed a contract and sold her soul to the devil. And I was all upset. I mean, I was really upset. I see, I'm upset again now. And I prayed about as hard as I had ever prayed in my life.
Who
did
that?
A lady in Brazil on my mission long ago.
Oh, she's white.
And she was a member of our ward. She was a member of our branch. Mm-hmm. And her mom was a witch. And anyway, she had done that. And I was so upset. And I prayed and prayed and prayed for her. And I got an answer, and the answer was so clear. And it was, no one can sell their soul to the devil. That is not a legitimate contract. I own her, and she's not for sale. People do not, you cannot. That's a trick, that's a deception of Satan. And it's an illegitimate, illegal contract. And I was able to go tell her that, and she did fine after that. So it's serious. We're property. It is property. We're going to read, we're going to have John, if you, any other comments on that before we have John read the last verse? Okay, John.
15, but because of being a complaining people, the Lord did not authorize me to call any of them under the priesthood of Melchizedek, for they are not worthy to be part of this holy order, except the 12 whom I appointed to send, and the rulers of 1,000, of 150, 10. But they have not been able to maintain this active craft because of their integrity, save Joshua.
Okay, comments.
Well, we have to be careful about being complaining and having no integrity.
Right.
I don't know where it stands. Integrity. I wrote this down.
Yeah, the last. Last
oh. Third, oh yeah. Last, yeah. 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 Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very end. Integrity.
Yeah. And then also the numbers I find interesting, because will that also be, well, with the building of Zion now, that it's that, like what, 12 and 1,000 and 100
and 50. The 50, we would normally put a comma after 50. In the Bible, it's, there were groups of 10 and then groups of 50.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's not 50-10, that's just how it came out. So there are groups of 10, and they're all, five of them make a group of 50, and a couple of those are 100, and then 1,000. So they would have leaders over all these different groups. That is an organizational thing which Moses did, and I don't know if that's going to be in the future. When the Mormons were crossing the plains in the days of Brigham Young, they also broke into, they followed this and had groups of 10 and of 50. And so there would be a leader, which would be an elder in the church, who would be called to lead a group of 50 people across the plains. So, but I think that might have just been an option. I don't know. Short answer, I don't know.
I think somewhere in Isaiah, it talks about the setup of the church spreading out in this manner of the 1,100, how the governing power is supposed to be there. And if that is a following of what the Lord wants his church to be structured, then I think it will be coming forth. But I do think here it says that if they're not worthy, then there's going to be changes to that. Right. I mean, the whole point is that we're going to be able to come together to be a united order. So the structure has to be there as the numbers grow.
Right.
But if we're not just going, maybe this is another reason for the plagues and for the Old Testament. It's not just going to be boom, today you're in charge of this 100 people. No, we're going to have to be worthy. We're going to have our heart right. The feelings have to be there. You're not just going to go from the old church to being in charge of something in the new church, because right. the old church is in apostasy.
Right. Very good. And notice in the inspired version of Genesis, when it talks about Melchizedek, Enoch and Melchizedek in more detail, it says that the high order of the high priesthood of Melchizedek, which the LDS Church lost in the days of Brigham Young, that order is not to be given by the will of man, but only by the will of God. In other words, an elder can be ordained. And see, the elder is not the high priesthood. It needs a separate name, and the church doesn't really have that yet. It has it, but it hasn't discovered it. It's in my papers, but it's not official. It's just in my papers. And I call it the Mosaic priesthood. It's the priesthood it's a priesthood which an elder holds. And so a stake president can decide who should become an elder and ordain elders, for example. And that's fine. And he may or may not be inspired if he has some authority there. But for the high priesthood of Melchizedek, it has to be called by the Lord. And it says here, the Lord did not authorize me to call any of them. In other words, he might have wanted to. I mean, I bet he wanted to.
Yeah.
But he could not be authorized except, who is the one? We should remember who, we already know that Aaron had the high priesthood and Moses.
Well, who's Joshua?
So Joshua is from the tribe of, he's from a whole different tribe of Joseph. And he's going to take Moses's place when Moses goes dies or is translated. Joshua is going to be the new leader. And he's actually from a different tribe of Israel. And this is where we learn he's a high priest. That's not in the Bible. And he's the only one authorized, ordained by Moses. And he's the one that's going to continue on. So there's no other comments. We will close there, I think, for today. And I think we're just about, look at that, we're just about on time. So that's all good. We are glad. Next time I will wake you up. Do not be mad at me if I wake you up.
I'm not mad at you.
I know you're mad at me for not waking you up.
No, I'm not mad at you.
Oh, you're not mad at me.
No.
I'm going to stop the recording. Don't anybody go anywhere.